Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 272.
This week on the podcast, Alabamians prove they are only 50% outright monsters.
And net neutrality is dead, much like the free flow of information is about to be.
Plus, the tax bill is finally solving some vital problems for the oft-ignored zillionaire set.
And in Paul Ryan's dystopia, corporations are people, and people are cattle, and cattle should start having more children to feed the corporations.
Plus, Donald Trump thinks we believe he could ever land Kirsten Gillibrand in a million years.
And Omarosa can't stop, won't stop being fired.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
This is a Saturday podcast.
Saturday.
We are about to take off on exciting adventures of holidayness, and
well,
we just didn't,
you are.
Right. Brent's about to host
about
his own
host
family.
One. Yeah.
But we just didn't have time to be doing this on Sunday.
No.
You know?
I think 272 of these suckers, and I don't think we've ever recorded this on a Saturday.
No, I don't think
but
so. We do Mondays a lot, though.
We do.
We've done Wednesdays. Yeah. We've done Tuesdays.
Sure.
We've just never
but
done Saturday.
We're going to record this podcast, and then we're going to go see I, Tonya, you guys.
That's right. We're so excited. Maybe you don't know because we probably don't talk about it enough unless it's an Olympics year and there hasn't been one for 4 years.
Right.
But we're like huge figure skating fans.
That's right.
So if you didn't know that before and you want to stop listening to this podcast, first
Lila,
of all,
a very
get your
adept
life right.
Figure skater herself.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I enjoy the sport as an activity as well.
Yeah. Also, so I've seen it already, as you know.
Right. Brent's seeing it a second time because I'm demanding it.
If you are one of our 20-something listeners and don't know the Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan story.
God, did people not know?
Yes. It was
that
fascinating. Get also just, you know, listen to the rest of this podcast. I almost said stop listening to this podcast. Don't do that.
No.
Listen
to
the podcast.
You need to know the news too.
But like, take to the internet while you still can.
Get your life right.
By the way.
Yes, right.
We'll talk about that in
exactly.
a little bit. Soon you might not be able to know about Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan.
If you didn't find out about it at the time, you may never be able to hear about it.
Right. But anyway, so
also,
we're excited about that.
These people must have been missing cultural references just like every 10 minutes.
Have been.
Like they don't get any references that have to do with crowbars or knees and the whaling shot and the
I mean,
you miss everything.
Galooing somebody was that was a verb for a while.
I know. And yet, if you're 22,
no, you don't.
Never
know.
Was.
No.
God, no.
Fascinating.
LOLing is a verb if you're 22.
Yeah.
But
well, we're old.
This is our weekly reminder to you that Puerto Rico still doesn't have their power back.
That's right.
In case you were wondering, does Puerto Rico have power? The answer is no, and always seems to be no, because they never seem to get it back.
This is the last podcast, I think, probably. Well, I don't know if we'll do one next week.
Right.
We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's the day before Christmas, Christmas Eve.
Christmas
I won't be
Eve.
Able to do it on
no.
Sunday.
We could do it
but,
on a random day,
you
though.
Know, the Puerto Rican power was supposed to be their Christmas miracle.
Yeah.
And they're running out of podcasts to do it.
Exactly. It's getting mighty down to the wire on the old advent calendar.
Yeah,
for,
that's right.
They're on their like 800th power.
You know about advent calendar?
Of course I know. They have chocolate inside an advent calendar. You think I don't know about chocolate?
You know what? I have one at my house and I'm behind.
Oh my God. I might join you later.
Catch me up.
I used to get them when I was a kid, obviously, because of my love for chocolate. And this year I was going to get one, but then I was in New York when December started and I was only coming back here for a week.
Oh,
and
right.
so I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And now I've been regretting it every single day because there's nothing I love more than an advent calendar.
I mean, you have a giant bowl of chocolate over.
That's true. I've been enjoying that as well.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the advent is, by the way, but I know what the calendar is for it.
That's enough.
Another unrelated side note that maybe we'll just keep reminding you about also is that CHIP still hasn't been renewed.
That's
so
right.
as it stands right now, 9 million children, the neediest of those children, by the way, or the neediest of the children, are standing to lose their health care over a program that is massively popular that everyone loves that Congress just can't get their fucking act together
and
to figure out.
And this is not, we all know that the Republicans have sort of like taken to hating this Obamacare boogeyman.
Right.
But CHIP was
beloved
by all. It was a bipartisan bill. It was passed. This was sort of after the, you know, failed sort of like big healthcare bill that Hillary Clinton was in charge of in the 90s. And like she worked on this and like Orrin Hatch voted for it. And there was like a whole thing, the CHIP.
Yeah,
bill.
It's a bipartisan program.
Yeah,
because everyone thinks poor children deserve healthcare.
Correct.
Unless they are actual monsters.
Right. Yeah.
Which, I mean, this Congress.
Right.
Not a surprising designation.
No, it's not.
But in any case, so we just wanted to remind you that you could be calling your reps at any time. it's hiatus. I mean, they're on vacation, but you can call them anyway. Whatever. Yeah, call them at home. Right. Who cares?
Find them.
Find them. Yeah, find them at home. They're at home. Right. Everyone knows where they live. Go do a protest outside their house telling them that they have to renew the funding for CHIP retroactively. Right. So that kids can have healthcare. I mean, Jesus Christ. In any case, yikes. We finally come to you with good news.
Yeah.
Which is rare in this day and age. We often come to you with funny news, but we rarely come to you with good news.
But the last two big elections, we've got to give you good news.
Yeah, and this one was exciting. If you don't know, also get your life right.
Like,
you do.
Yeah.
Alabama voted for Doug Jones.
Yeah.
And Roy Moore will not be a U.S. Senator.
That's right.
I mean, they...
Slow clap to you.
To Alabama. As I said, all hail whatever flimsy excuse for a god they have in Alabama.
I know.
Because we aren't running headlong into the dark ages. Like,
what a sad time for pederasts everywhere. Because if you can't win a Senate seat in Alabama...
Then where can you?
Where can you?
Yeah, this was the world's most exciting election returns night.
It was.
In recent memory, at least.
I learned a lot. I love these elections because I always learn a lot about geography. I learned that there's a blue belt.
Or a black belt, depending on who you're talking to.
Sure, exactly, yes. Uh-huh.
They're correlated. Yeah. You might not be shocked to hear.
But I was looking at that map and, like, I was looking at the New York Times live map and seeing, like, where the returns were out. And I called it much earlier than all of the news organizations did.
Brent
and I have text messages to prove it.
Brent has an uncanny ability to retain information about geographical voting habits in obscure states, which is why on presidential election nights he'll often be like, "Well, don't worry, that Virginia, Northern Virginia vote's not in yet, so we can't definitively say anything about Virginia." Like, no. I've learned a lot about voting geography just because Brent seems to like retain that information, and this
I'm like, the western half of Birmingham is still out. So
everybody stay calm.
We're fine.
Right. I feel like I had never thought to even find this information about Alabama because they usually vote for Republicans by like a 30% margin. Right, exactly. So it was never relevant.
Yeah. Trump a year ago.
Yeah, exactly. But Jones won with a margin of just under 2 points.
Yeah.
That margin generously provided by black women and not provided by idiot white people in Alabama who are still voting wrong.
Right, exactly. A lot of tweets going around the next day about how black women are continuing to try and save America from itself. And those tweets aren't wrong.
And also trying to save Roy Moore from himself. I mean, if God is the black woman that everyone was tweeting that God is, then God intervened in part to save Roy Moore from his own hand.
I was going
to
say, then vengeance is coming to Roy Moore beyond this election.
Beyond this
election. By the way, rode to his polling place on his horse, Sassy. Had anyone else, literally any other human done that, I would have been like, you know what? I got to give it to him.
Yeah, but like, not this guy.
Even other Republicans.
Well, he's like a fucking cartoon. That was just like a full-out cartoon move. There was no substance to that.
Yeah.
Here's the one sliver of good news that is about the electorate in general, which is it seems like wealthy white suburbs started to move away from the GOP platform. Obviously, they still voted Republican in startling numbers and obviously revealed themselves to be racist and okay with pederasts and other things like that.
Yeah.
However, if we're talking about margins, the margins in those areas were much slimmer than usual. Doug Jones even won some of those wealthy white suburbs. So that means that this base that had been voting for Trump sort of reluctantly is starting to move away from the Trump world.
Yeah.
And that, for 2018, means a lot of things in a lot of places.
Yeah, it definitely does. Now, part of the reason why the Republicans didn't want Roy Moore to win this, besides the fact that they just didn't want to have to be dealing with him. And also, but there was some real fear that he could lose despite this anyway, because before all of this came out, like, yes, it was a huge night for Doug Jones and for Democrats, and there's a lot of huge takeaways, whether it was like turnout in the African American community or whatever it was.
And overcoming huge obstacles to voting because of voter ID laws.
Right, exactly. The last time Roy Moore was on the ballot statewide was in 2012 when Mitt Romney won that state by 30 points. Roy Moore won 52-48.
Yeah.
So this is Roy Moore is a person who has like rabid, crazed, like lunatic.
Much like Trump himself.
A base of people who are big enough in a Republican primary to push him over the edge. But he is sort of like mostly already hated by almost 50% of the state.
Well, he's too crazy.
He's too crazy. He's, even for Alabama, which is, that's a yikes right there.
That's, well, because the other thing that I accidentally learned about Alabama and all of this was a little bit about Alabama electoral history. And the thing that was most shocking to me about that was Alabama had a Democratic senator until 1997. Now, you might think, well, that's 20 years ago, blah, blah, blah. But I want to point out, the South started moving away from the Democratic Party in the 60s. That means that this person, or that, you know, the that Democratic seat made it through the Civil Rights era. They made it through the Vietnam era. Yeah. They made it through the 80s, the Reagan era.
Right.
And in 1992, Alabamans went to the polls and voted for a Democrat.
Yeah, and do you know what happened in 97?
We didn't run one.
No, that Democrat switched parties.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right, yes, that is what happened.
Yeah.
But my point is that the party loyalty aspect of this is not what we have been led to believe, because they also had they had two Democratic senators into the 80s. So they survived for like 30 years out of the civil rights movement with Democrats representing them.
Right.
And as much as these were Southern Democrats, they weren't great Democrats.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, they were the Joe Manchins of Democrats.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Sure.
But my point is, why is it then that we did not even run someone against Jeff Sessions when he last ran for office 3 years ago?
Well,
why aren't we even running people in that state?
Right.
The entire history of Alabama is Democrats representing them up until 1997.
Yeah, I know. And the thing that is exciting about Doug Jones himself is I think a lot of people probably voted for Doug Jones not really knowing a lot about his beliefs, because I think this was a referendum on Roy Moore. But you might be thinking to yourself, well, a Democrat who's getting elected statewide in Alabama has to be a pro-life Democrat and has to be perhaps vaguely racist and has to be, but that is not the case at all. I mean,
no, he's a real Democrat.
He's a real life Democrat. I mean, he's not going to,
I mean, he's a Democrat.
Right.
He's
he's not going to like turn into Elizabeth Warren once he gets there. But I mean, he is pro-choice. He has a history of he's tried cases as a prosecutor, like against the KKK, and so he has like some credibility as like someone who is, he's not, you know, there was like a tweet from somebody like on the like the head of like the Republican Governors Association or something, and they were like, you know, if Doug Jones really knows what's best for him, he'll go to the United States Senate and represent his people by voting with the Republicans. And it's like, well, that is first off ridiculous because fuck you.
Right.
But also, it's just not what he's going to do. Joe Manchin. He's actually to the left of Joe Manchin. So
he is a middle of the road Democrat.
Right.
I mean, he's not Bernie Sanders.
No.
He's not a Democratic Socialist.
No.
But he's
further to the left than you would think would be able to get elected there, regardless of running against
what
Roy
I'm
Moore.
Saying. There is no actual rule here.
Agreed.
That Democrats, real Democrats, can't get elected in these places.
Yeah.
Most of the South has a long history of voting for Democrats, obviously in different times, obviously race, you know, there was the Dixie Democrats, it was a different kind of Democratic Party at the time. But my point is, the idea that we were letting Jeff Sessions run away with the seat that we only got in the 90s, or that they only got in the late 90s.
Yeah.
This is
20 years ago.
This is 20 years ago. This is years after Bill Clinton has been elected.
Right.
Like, that says to me
from Arkansas.
Exactly. That says to me that you can get Democrats elected in Alabama if you run them.
Yeah.
Maybe not frequently. Maybe not all the time.
Right.
Maybe those Democrats have to be compromised Democrats that we don't actually want in the Democratic Party. Whatever it is. My point is that you can't win a seat you didn't run for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody should be running unopposed in any election anywhere.
Yeah.
Because obviously this does a huge amount of service for the Democratic brand in Alabama. It means that people who didn't think to vote got someone to vote for in you know, in this election. And it means that now there's like an apparatus to get out the vote for future elections. Like, it's just crazy to me.
Well, and that is one of the huge things that I think was a big takeaway here, because one of the things that the Jones campaign and also national Democrats to a degree didn't want to do was nationalize this race. And whenever you go and whenever there's a state like this, that's
like
understandable.
Georgia, this happened.
You're not trying to send Nancy Pelosi down there to help out Doug Jones, because
that's not helping the people of Alabama vote for Doug Jones.
So like you sort of, you don't send you know, the people that you would naturally think of to sort of, like, go and, like, make this a huge deal. And, you know, yeah, like,
you apparently
look at all of us Democrats here. But,
you send Charles Barkley.
You know, they had, well, right, Charles Barkley. But they also had this group Vote or Die down there. They had so many different, like, local groups
that got started with local groups because of this.
Right, exactly. And so, like, that is, like, really heartening, because that is what drove the turnout too.
Yeah.
It was those groups.
People on the ground understand the demographics of their area better. They understand the logistics of their area better. They understand who can conceivably be asked to vote and who can't really make it to vote better. Like, there are so many things that people on the ground understand that national voter groups don't have access to.
Yeah.
Because they don't have social currency in the area.
Yeah.
That's true in any swing district in the country. It's true in any Republican district in the country. It's true in any Democratic district in the country as well. It's true, obviously, everywhere. But the reason you run someone in every election is to develop these groups.
Yeah.
It's not about the person winning. No one was going to beat Jeff Sessions for that seat. I get it.
Sure.
And I get that they didn't want to spend the money on a wasted race, but it wouldn't have been a waste, because these groups would have formed, you know, there would have been groups on the ground ready for local elections, for statewide elections, for, you know, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I agree.
All you have to do is run someone.
Yeah. It's getting delicious, though, because they're obviously, like, the bloodletting has started.
Oh, my God.
Because, like...
Well, Roy Moore won't concede, so that's helping.
For sure.
He's claiming he's waiting for that military vote to come in. He would have
to win literally
100% of it minus one. He could lose one of the military ballot votes and edge out to victory by one vote. But... Yeah. I don't think it's likely that 100% of the military voted for him, unless they're fake military members who are voter fraud committers.
Yeah, exactly.
At the very last minute, Alabama's other senator came out and was like, I'm going to write in.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the big sort of stories of the night, too, was the write-in vote almost
2%.
Made up the difference of what it was. A lot of people were like, posting that there was like a huge write-in campaign going for the football coach of the Alabama football team. And
I want to know how many votes Mickey Mouse got.
Right.
I feel like usually Mickey Mouse gets a lot of votes in these circumstances. And also spelled weird ways, like Mickey Mouse spelled with extra E's or no E's. That's usually something that happens.
Yeah.
It was it made great news stories also because it was Doug Jones's 25th wedding anniversary.
Yes.
It was the first night of Hanukkah, so there were a lot of Hanukkah miracle
Exactly. I went to dinner with our mutual friend Lauren and her sister, who was in for Hanukkah, and we toasted to the Hanukkah miracle
That's the Jews lent a Hanukkah miracle to Alabama.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that was fitting too. After the day they said that they weren't anti-Semitic because they had a Jew lawyer. I mean, that was his wife.
With the hard J and everything. They really...
Uh-huh. Our lawyer's a Jew.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Black women and the Jews really came to play in their own ways.
Yeah.
Trump sent a very measured tweet that was obviously not written by him.
No.
So obviously someone on his team was like, we need to run away from this story really fast. The optics of the whole thing were just too silly for anyone to actually effectively run away from.
Right.
Between the horse sassy and the, it's like too much.
Yeah.
And also the dancing at the Doug Jones party.
Oh, boy.
A lot of joyous dancing.
Sure.
There were a few people in cowboy hats and
there
such
was him
who were doing
singing at the
Roy
Moore.
A lot of praying.
One.
It did not look like a fun party. If there's one thing, my mother always says this about D.C. She's always like, when the Democrats are in power, they have fun parties in D.C. And when the Republicans are in power, all the fun stops. Like, Republicans are not fun. They don't throw fun parties.
Yeah.
They throw lavish parties. They're rich.
Yeah.
But they're not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun for people.
Right. But this is huge for all the reasons that we've stated so far, but also because we've been talking about, you know, the 2018 map for Democrats not being great. And having this seat is like one less sort of, we still have to defend all of these seats, but it's like, nobody would have thought we would have been at 49 after this, as opposed to 48. So, the other person who has been, that has like made this whole thing delicious is that Steve Bannon is really totally under fire now. And I have actually, does he deserve it? Of course. Like, let's rag on Steve Bannon.
Have you seen the
any
conspiracy theory
that
he is Russell Crowe?
Yes. Well, from you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe the helicopters have come to get us.
But I want to, you know what? I'm going to give Steve Bannon a pass on this one. And let me tell you why. Not give him a pass, because he is very much responsible for this. However, this is a thing that the Republicans have been up to for a long time. The reason that they are only just now, literally, as of 2016, in control of the Senate is because they have been picking candidates like Roy Moore left, right, and center without the help of Steve Bannon. I mean, probably with the help of Steve Bannon, because Breitbart existed in 2010. But
with
like he wasn't a famous person in the way where he could hold a rally and like thousands of people would come out to see Steve Bannon speak. So, you know, Steve Bannon was not personally responsible for Sharon Angle.
No.
Steve Bannon was not personally responsible for Christine O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Or Todd Akin in Indiana. Or that other, you know, women can't get pregnant from
Murdoch
rape in Indiana who lost that race. So Republicans have been doing a bang-up job picking assholes like Roy Moore to run statewide without the help of Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, sure, yes, like, let's rag on Steve Bannon because he's an asshole. But, like, he's just really sort of, like, continuing a long tradition that they've been working with.
Well, since the Tea Party.
Since the Tea Party started.
This has been their act. Well, and this is really delicious because it means that the Republicans are going to have to run away from their own record right now.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to figure out how to get their constituents to vote for reasonable candidates that they don't have to run away from. Like, it leaves them with no strategy.
Yeah, I know. And
there's path forward.
Yeah, there was actually a really good, there was an article on Politico about all of the, because Steve Bannon has said he's going to primary all of these people. He's going to primary Dean Heller. That's a seat that the Democrats think that they could potentially win. But obviously, Dean Heller has a better chance at winning Nevada than some, like, loon bag does. Like, the Democrat will beat a loon bag if Steve Bannon pulls off a primary victory there. And the same in Arizona. That's one that the Democrats are thinking that, like, perhaps there's, like, an outside chance that they can, like, you know, sneak one over on the Republicans on. And it's basically a list of, I think,
it
could be anywhere. They basically listed all of the people that he has either already endorsed or have said that they are going to run that seem like are the type of people that he can endorse in all of these states. And if that's the case, the map, once you're winning in Alabama, the map doesn't fucking matter anymore.
No.
There's no map.
There's no map.
There's no map that's bad anyway. You know what I mean? Like, you can't look at the Democrats and be like, oh, well, how's Claire McCaskill going to defend her seat in 2018?
Yeah, it's like
irrelevant. Well, she's going to run against somebody who's nuttier than Todd Akin. Yeah. That's how she's going to win.
Also, there at this point, the Dean Hellers are already in trouble.
What?
And that's why no one in Arizona is running for their seat again, because they all fucking left because they're in trouble.
Right.
You know? Jeff Flake is leaving
or
office.
Or they're dying.
But Jeff Flake is leaving. Jeff Flake's not dying.
No.
He's a young guy. He's a strapping, maybe too tan, but otherwise healthy. He's leaving office because his electoral math suddenly got very complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and his opportunity to not look like an idiot fool while sitting in a Senate that is being idiot fools, like that are acting like idiot fools, is also gotten very, very slim. Like it just like, at this point, we're going to start having to see, like, moderates are going to start willingly dropping out of these things.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to run in this climate.
Right.
This is a terrible climate to be moderate in.
Right.
You might as well elect a conservative Democrat.
I know.
They stand for the same shit.
I know, exactly. Lastly, before we move off of this, because I've been, the one thing that has, I have been trying to put an end to is the, we've been hearing a lot of Republicans say, well, this was not a referendum on Trump. This was a referendum on Roy Moore. And while, if you're using the word referendum, perhaps that is accurate. That I think to a large degree, yes, it was a referendum on Roy Moore as opposed to the president. But I think what it does show is that the president's clout
is diminishing.
So it might not have necessarily been a referendum on him, but the president went full hog. I don't even know if that's a saying.
Whole hog.
I think it is. Whole hog. Yeah.
Full bore, whole hog.
Right. For Roy Moore
in the
weeks leading up to this.
Yeah.
And this is a man who has a huge base. He would, in Alabama. He would obviously win the Alabama electoral votes if the election were tomorrow. He won by almost 30 points, and he could not deliver this thing.
Well, let's see. I think his base is not as huge as we think. It is rapidly diminishing. And I don't think that we can say that the Donald Trump of late 2017 has the same base that these margins would indicate from 2016.
Yeah.
Donald Trump doesn't have clout anymore. Right. He's shown that he's a loser as an he's a loser as an endorsement because you don't want to be associated with him.
No.
I mean, this is he not only endorsed Roy Moore, you know, when Roy Moore was the candidate. He endorsed Roy Moore at a Luther Strange rally where he was there to ostensibly endorse Luther Strange. He's been endorsing Roy Moore surreptitiously this whole time, and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
So, like, this, like, I think he's going to always have 25% of the country enraptured with his nonsense.
Yeah.
25% of the country just can't be reasoned with. Sorry about it. That's true in every nation, though. There are 25% of people everywhere in the world who are just impossible. And, like, what can you do, you know? That 25% does not win you an election, though. You need people who are thinking that they're making rational decisions to also vote for you. And the longer Trump is in office, the harder it's going to be for him to call upon those people, even for economic reasons, because most of them are still about to be fucked over by this tax bill.
Yeah.
Like, the only people who aren't being fucked over by this tax bill are extremely wealthy. But the upper middle class people that don't quite have $5 million worth of, you know,
wealth to pass down,
but are otherwise, you know, like, kind of doing okay.
Yeah.
Those people are not going to just keep going to the polls for people that keep fucking them over.
Right.
So, in any case, my point is that I think that the constant refrain that Donald Trump has any clout, which I hear all the time, is bullshit at this point.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't have any clout.
This proved it. Yeah.
Yeah. This proved it. He doesn't have clout. The Republican
Virginia
Party doesn't
governor's
have clout.
Governor's race, I think, proved it to a degree.
Exactly. Like, this is about to become a real problem for them. Not just a clout.
Yeah.
It's not that he doesn't have clout. He's a liability.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in any case, it might not matter. We might never have information again because net neutrality is dead. And, you know, the only people that can stop the madness are Congress, and obviously they're not going to do shit. But this is an interesting issue because, so on Thursday, the FCC repealed the net neutrality regulations.
Right. Three to two party lines.
Right, of course, that make it illegal for internet service providers to charge you different amounts for different kinds of access to the internet.
Right.
Here's a good breakdown. I pulled a breakdown from Engadget about what this means for everyone, just because I feel like we all vaguely understand what this means as consumers. But we don't really necessarily talk about, there are three parties that are really involved in this conversation, and we don't really talk about the differences between the other two, which is there's tech companies and then the sort of big ISP providers. So as consumers, we want to save money. We want to save money, and we want to have access to the information that we have access to. We don't want to pay more money to get Facebook. We don't want to pay more money to get the New York Times.
Right.
And we don't want our internet service providers to throttle service to services that we use.
Right.
Tech companies also want to make money. And tech companies and big ISP, I mean, both want to make money. But their goals are sort of diametrically opposed. So the two corporate entities involved in this conversation have diametrically opposed agendas.
Right.
It makes perfect sense, but it's part of what makes it such a complicated issue.
Yeah.
Because dismantling net neutrality makes it much harder for big tech companies to compete.
Correct.
They don't want to pay more money in order to have access to fast internet.
Right.
Google doesn't want to have to pay Comcast $1 zillion a year in order to be still be Google.
Listed within the package that Comcast is offering. Because basically this is sort of like what people are sort of saying is that this could turn it into sort of like almost like a... It's been getting compared to like cable packages, basically.
Totally.
It's not exactly the same, but like that's
a similar analogy. Right. Yeah. But the kinds of companies that we're talking about huge companies.
Yeah.
We're talking about Facebook and Google and Apple and Twitter and companies that really, that control the flow of information in this country to a large degree.
Right. Slash our lives.
And they're very opposed to destroying net neutrality because for them, having to pay these extra fees doesn't benefit their bottom line. But also smaller ISPs are also not in favor of this because the big ISPs, obviously, they have a lot of corporate holdings because like Comcast owns NBC Universal, which owns Hulu, which, you know, like they have all these media entities. Smaller ISPs don't have access to that. So this stifles their ability to compete in the same marketplace. So I think The thing that I am sort of...
Stifling competition, one of the things that Republicans
claim they're not trying to do.
Right, yeah. Okay.
But I think that the anger from the tech sector might be what ultimately saves us from this nonsense, yeah. Because it's one thing to do something that Comcast is thrilled with, and they're a huge company. They're the biggest ISP in the nation. They own a huge media entity. They own a lot of stream. You know, they own a streaming service that they want to compete.
Well, a bunch of states are suing
Bunch of states are suing.
And it's not a list of states that are, you know,
no, it's random
leftist whack, like Mississippi is on the list. I think Kentucky is on the list. I mean,
first of all, is bad for consumers. But once it's bad for your local industry,
right?
It's only good for local industry in a couple of places that host mega industries.
Right.
And it's not good for most of the industries in those places. So, like, take California.
Right,
California has those mega industries here. Yeah. NBC Universal is here. Comcast has a big presence here. Like, these are all things that if Comcast makes a lot of money, that theoretically is money that's in California. However, the entire tech sector is also in California.
San Francisco is going to shut down.
San Francisco, is going to shut down over this. And when we really talk about who's contributing jobs and money to our economy here, it's really we're talking about Google and Apple and companies like that. We're not just talking about Comcast.
Yeah.
So here, the goals are a little bit murky because it doesn't really benefit even the states that it would benefit. So of course, states like Mississippi, where they, you know, even their big industries are going to lose out because they're not, they don't host Comcast in Mississippi. Or like this makes it kind of a challenging argument to make. I understand that they've done it.
Yeah.
But I also think that usually when something that big industry is against passes like this, it gets sorted because pissing off Apple doesn't help anyone.
No.
You know?
Well, and also,
we're all on their service.
It's so bizarre to me to, like, I get that sort of, like, the idea is probably that they're trying to give a kickback to the Comcasts of the world because those are the people
big
who
donors
are
for them.
Right, exactly. But, like, besides all the things that you just said, like, our economy sort of at large right now is so heavily information based.
Yes.
It's not, we don't live in a world economy anymore where it's built on, at least in the US, certainly, making things. I mean, we do, certainly, but I mean, like, it's information.
A lot of what we're making is information, though.
So it just doesn't seem to, it sort of like flies in the face of like literally how America like works right now.
I don't think you want to go to war as the government with the services that provide our content in this way.
I don't.
You know, it doesn't make sense. If where are people getting their news? They're getting it from Google. They're getting it from Facebook. They're getting it from Twitter. Like, do you really want to take these services and go to war with them?
Yeah.
Like, I understand that you have the upper hand in that you have the sort of access to the web. But they have the access to the content. They're the ones providing the information.
Yeah.
So this just doesn't seem like a smart, you know, this seems like it's fracturing power that wants to stay together naturally.
Yeah.
So, and also, they're getting a big tax kickback anyway. Like, what do they need this bullshit? Comcast doesn't need more.
Right, exactly.
We're cutting their tax rate by like a zillion percent. Like, we need this bullshit from them.
Yeah.
In any case, like Brent said, a bunch of states are suing over this. And also, Congress has the power to reverse this ruling if they act within 60 days of the ruling. So call your Congress people.
Yeah.
I know that seems unlikely because they're terrible, but this is actually a fairly bipartisan issue.
I could see a world where that they might take it up.
Well, Ed Markey and Mike Doyle have promised to raise the issue, but there actually is a sizable group of Republicans that are also concerned about this because it really does stifle business in a very clear way.
Yeah.
It's good for one kind of business, but it's terrible for the rest of the kinds of businesses.
Right.
So it's not really a pro-business move.
Yeah.
And it's rare that you get the opportunity. Like, usually they take from us and give to the corporations. And so it's harder to kind of track what's going on.
Right.
But taking from smaller corporations and giving to giant corporations is a clear strategy. And those are all their constituents.
Right.
They don't care about us, but the corporations are their constituents.
Right.
So
yes.
They'll care about that.
Yeah.
So in any case, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I called my mom about it and she was really torn. And then she was just like, you know what? They're just going to have to fix it. It's like her new strategy with everything is she's like, I'm not depressed anymore because it's all going to shit. But you know what? They're just going to have to fix it.
Well, you know, this is a classic Carla Nordstrom.
Yeah. Nothing can't be undone.
I was going to say this. She has given us
our most hopeful
right, exactly.
mantra that we repeat in these times.
Thanks, Carla.
Yeah. But she finally was just like, I can't fix all of it.
Right,
I can call my senators every day, but like, I can't fix all of it.
Yeah.
But they'll just have to fix it.
Yeah, but we can.
Yeah.
Someday.
People will just have to fix this stuff.
Right.
So, speaking of things we're going to have to fix.
Oh, boy.
The tax bill's back.
Oh,
and
yeah.
ready for a vote.
And ready and with the votes.
And with the votes. Now, here's a thing I want to remind everyone before we move on.
Yeah.
This is a repeal of the ACA. Remember when we didn't have the votes to repeal the ACA because your senators didn't want to look like fools repealing the ACA?
Right.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing right now.
Yes.
This eliminates the mandate.
Susan Collins would tell you that she's made sure that they're going to also pass some like cost sharing measures to make sure that states still get funded to pay who the
Susan
fuck knows
Collins
what
is full of shit though.
She's full of shit because
there's no plans for
fucking pipe dream.
Yeah.
Also, if that comes up as a separate bill, Mitch McConnell might have told her that he had the votes for it or that he would bring it up or whatever.
But
I mean, like, just because he brings it up and Susan Collins votes for it, that's the only one person who's voted for it.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't like she's not getting anything.
No.
So
except for maybe gonna get booted out of office over
well,
this.
Maybe.
But so in any case, before we tell you about all the other horrible things, just keep in mind, this is an Obamacare repeal bill.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Whether or not it also does other evil things, which it does, that's both relevant and irrelevant to my main point, which is that we didn't have the votes to pass an Obamacare repeal for a reason. And now we are doing it under the guise of being a tax bill.
Right.
But this is an Obamacare repeal
bill. And they are doing it under the guise of being able to say, well, you can still get health care.
Right. Which is what they've always said, and that's like how you can still buy a
boat.
Buy
a mansion. Right, exactly.
You can you have the ability to buy a private plane.
Yep, that's right.
You may not have the money to do it.
Yep.
But certainly you have the right to.
Yeah.
Anyone can,
you have access to. That's their favorite thing.
Yes,
to
you
say.
Have access to. You'll have access to health insurance.
Sure.
It'll be $8,000 a month.
Right.
But you can buy
it's
it if you can afford it. It's there to buy.
Right. Yep.
This new bill, so the compromise bill, it keeps the 7 income tax brackets, but lowers all of them. It doubles the standard deduction and the child tax credit, but it gets rid of a lot of other deductions that other people use.
Uh-huh.
It's really bad for freelancers because a lot of deductions that freelancers use were eliminated. And it seems like on an industry-by-industry specific basis. Like I was reading something about how a lot of these specific deductions that people in Hollywood use were eliminated. But, like, there are other industries where you still can...
You
can buy machinery, but you can't, you know, deduct your agent's expenses or whatever it is. Like, there's all sorts of stuff like that. SALT deductions are capped at $10,000.
Yeah.
That
state
means...
And local tax.
That's state and local tax deduction that is going to... You'll get to choose which of the state and local taxes you want. It can be
property
taxes, it can be sales tax.
But if you live in California...
Then
and,
you pay more
and
than
actually
that.
Own a home, then you, that you're really
you're
picking
losing.
And choosing peanuts,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Because,
And so, in any case, that means keep the pressure on
those
blue state Republicans. There are a lot of
specifically in the House.
Yes, in the House specifically.
Well, that's the only place they are,
exactly.
I guess. Suppose they're not in the Senate. But I mean...
But, you know, the Daryl Issas of the world, a lot of them have said they're not going to vote for this because of this SALT deduction thing. But make sure that they
and
follow through on that.
There's enough of all of them, I think.
I think there should
collectively,
be. Collectively,
right?
Some of them
block?
Are too crazy to actually
care. I know,
care.
That's a problem.
But keep the pressure on them because they're really our only hope right now.
Yeah.
It limits the mortgage interest deduction. It eliminates deductions for moving expenses that are paid by either you or your employer. It reduces the medical expense deduction, which mostly hurts low-income people because they're the ones who are using this
right,
deduction
that's
most
where,
frequently.
That's where if you've had a sort of like catastrophic, like if it's 10% of your income, you can write that off.
Right, you can write that off. Now it's gone down to 7.5% of your income.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry because it lowers the corporate tax rate. From 35% to 21%.
Well, thank God.
And that is the only thing in this bill that is permanent.
Yeah, that's right.
But thank God. Corporations are people, as we know from Mitt
that's
Romney.
Right.
And because they're people, at least some people, none of them breathing people, are getting a tax cut here.
That's right.
That is consistent. And and none of those people, by the way, have to buy health insurance because they're not people. They're corporations.
Right.
They don't have any of the expenses of regular people, and they get a tax cut. So it's really a win-win for them. Again, not people. Ted Cruz's secret plan to give rich people tax-free accounts to pay for private schools is in there.
Oh,
so,
all right.
Fortunately, we're now subsidizing private school educations
Fantastic.
From people who have access to free public school educations where they are.
Correct.
It doubles
but
the...
But not Christian education.
That's true. Yeah, it's not Christian. The public schools really aren't providing you the fake news education that you would hope for if you are a rich person who also wants to make sure your children are small-minded. It doubles the threshold for the estate tax so that now you'll get $11 million to inherit tax-free.
That's right.
Thank God that very important $5.5 million to $11 million
group
is getting some relief.
Yeah.
They have been working hard, and they really, it has been tough for them.
Yeah.
For all these years, having those millions has been nothing but a burden, just passing it down tax.
Money from generation to generation.
Having to pay minor taxes on just the amount above $5.5 million has been a real problem.
It is.
And I feel sad for them because of that. Yeah. Certainly, their success and wealth is owed nothing to the society that we have built for them. That's one thing we know for sure.
No.
But so in any case, here's our last reminder that this is not the law yet.
Yes.
This is still not the law.
Yes.
On Monday, you can hit the ground running.
Yes.
You can call everyone under the sun. Call your friends and tell them to call their senators.
Yeah.
Call people that you don't even live in their district. Whatever.
Yeah.
Call everyone.
Exactly.
Because this is a disaster.
Yeah.
And we want to make clear that this is not something that they can pass and then just have.
Yeah.
You know, we can remind them that if Democrats take back the House and Senate in 2018, that we will work nonstop to undo all of these things. That if they passed a reasonable compromise bill, we would not actively seek to undo everything that they did.
Yeah.
But we can do that. We can undo all of this.
That's right.
So we have to make sure we stay on top of doing that.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, because the people who are in New York and Southern California are the people who could potentially undo this, you know, I know that people are listening to us in Southern California. I heard something on the radio the other day that like 5 House seats within driving distance of Los Angeles or in parts of Los Angeles anyway, or LA County are ones that Democrats are eyeing to flip. That's 1/5 of the amount that they would need to take back the House.
Exactly.
We could drive to.
Yeah.
So
start driving.
So, right. But also and even if you don't drive to it, like call them and be like, P.S. Like, no, I can't vote for you, but I'm fucking coming for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like you can.
Exactly.
You can
physically.
You know what
do
I mean?
That.
Like, we live in West Hollywood. I'm not worried about Adam Schiff getting reelected, but I could sure take an hour jaunt and knock on 100 doors to make sure Daryl Issa doesn't get elected again.
No, I mean, this is
so
the thing.
Just
that,
because you don't live in these people's districts doesn't mean that you can't pick up the phone.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't mean that you can't figure out ways to get their constituents to pick up the phone as well.
Exactly,
obviously,
yes.
That's the most effective thing.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean these are all areas that are very connected to where we live in Southern California.
Yeah.
If you know somebody who lives in those districts, make sure they're picking up the phone too.
Right.
I mean, the point is that we can do everything that we can do to stop this from becoming the law.
Right.
And then we can also do everything we can do to undo it.
Right.
But we have to do it in those 2 steps.
Right, exactly. Yes.
And those 2 steps are going to be exhausting, and they're exhausting us. And I'm just like, I get it. We're all sick of this bullshit.
But
don't just fall into despair over this. I've been seeing a lot of people just fall into despair over this.
Yeah.
Like, get angry instead.
Yeah, right?
This is something very specific that you can work towards. I know a lot of these like weird rules they make or whatever are like difficult to keep track of and you're not really sure what the implications are and when they go into effect and whatnot. This is something really specific that we can all work on. This will change the way American society functions on a whole.
Yeah,
it is that massive. It's that big. And keep in mind that they know that it's harder to raise taxes and lower them. So they know they're dumping a mess on the Democrats' door.
Yeah, of course.
We
can
make sure, A, that we remember that.
Well,
so when Democrats
try
to raise taxes, we're not like, no, we would never.
Well, and they're dumping it on their own door intentionally, too, because now they want to do entitlements.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
This is in part specifically meant to, you know,
To create a crisis. Yeah.
Yeah. So they know that. I mean, it's not as if they're going to like, it's not as if they're, I mean, they'll act shocked when there's a crisis.
But they know.
But they know now that they're creating it. I mean, they're not, they're idiots.
They're intentionally
doing
it.
They're
intentionally doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're intentionally doing it. And then they're going to be like, well, we can't afford Social Security because we don't have the money.
Right, exactly. Look at this debt.
Yeah. And where's that money from? What happened to the money?
It went to rich people.
We have to remember.
Went to corporations.
Yeah, exactly. So in any case, Here's another tidbit about the tax bill that no one is really covering, but that we want to make sure we sneak in there because we're obsessed with Puerto Rico, which is that they did not end up passing the 20% excise tax.
Oh, good.
But they did end up passing a 12.5% tax on income Puerto Rico receives from intellectual property. That will still have a huge impact on the economy in Puerto Rico and will still further put them in debt.
Yeah.
And not only that, it'll probably cause companies to leave the island. It's going to cause them to lose jobs. Why the... That's America. Why are we doing this? They're not even Democrats there.
I know.
Jesus Christ. They are not even reliably Democratic and we're doing this.
I know.
I mean, for God's sakes. They are taxpaying American citizens. God. This doesn't make any sense. This is a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
In any case.
Oh boy.
Remember that, too. I don't know what you're going to do about it, but just remember it.
Right.
In other kind of positive news...
Yeah.
About, we're doing a lot of about faces on this podcast. A federal judge in Pennsylvania just blocked the Trump administration's plan that was going to let any company not provide contraception to anyone over their own personal beliefs.
Yeah.
The judge basically said this would mean that there would be more unintended pregnancies in Pennsylvania, and that would put a huge burden on the state healthcare apparatus.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is maybe what's going to kill some of these things, is that states are not going... Even Republican states don't want a huge financial burden to arrive at their door.
Right.
That is, and it's much harder for states to disconnect from these specific issues because they, you know, are a much more localized kind of government. So it's harder for them to be like, no, we don't care about people in this state. Do better.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and when they do try to do that, the consequences are disastrous. That's what we saw in Kansas where, you know, they tried to get rid of everything in Kansas. And finally the Republicans were like, well, we're going to have to raise taxes here.
Right? Like, we don't know. We don't have any money.
Yeah.
By the way, the judge's name is Wendy Beetlestone.
That's so
which
true.
Which we can't leave not this say. Story without. No. Bring that to your attention.
But there's also a federal judge in California who heard arguments over this. And there are other states that are on the California motion. Delaware, Maryland, New York, and Virginia have joined that case as well. So some of these things are going to get slowed down in court.
Yeah.
A lot of this is just shit they're trying to throw at us to confuse us.
Yeah.
But we're just going to have to make lists, you guys. We're going to have to be organized.
By the way, we don't have a story about this, but if you haven't had a chance to take a look at the Senate hearing of those judges this week.
Yes.
Where... it was a Republican senator. I can't even remember who it was grilling the nominees to the federal court where the guys had no fucking clue about anything. Like had never what's a courtroom? I mean, like just could not like answer
like basic information. You know,
yeah, exactly. Like law school 101, had never tried cases, had never done like, it was just, it's, you know, it's only 5 minutes long. It's a good watch. It's a tragic watch.
Watch it while the internet still exists.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing that was weird that happened this week was that rumors started flying that Paul Ryan was going to retire.
Right.
Now, he's said no. But
this
tax
bill is his white whale.
That you're not going to retire regardless of whether you're going to retire. Just like Hillary Clinton said she wasn't going to run for president until she was definitely going to run for president.
Right.
So we don't know the answer. Yeah. But yeah, apparently... Because the tax bill is sort of his grand, you know, been his grand plan this entire time.
He's hated this job from the get-go. Never wanted it.
No, they forced him to do it.
In the first place,
Remember when he was going to get time with his family and all this stuff? And obviously none of that worked out.
Yeah, no.
Also, this is embarrassing right now to be in this job, to have to cozy up to Trump. Trump is like toying with him all the time. Trump criticizes him and then says, no, I love you. And, you know, like it's like being in a bad relationship with a psychopath.
Yeah.
But so they're... was an article in HuffPo about it. Then Politico did a story about it where they said no one could be found who believed Ryan wanted to stick around after the 2018 election. and he said, so he was at a press conference for the tax bill. And as he was leaving, a reporter yelled a question about whether he was going to leave. And he said, I'm not, no, with a chuckle. But obviously that's what you say when you're going to leave. And let's start spreading that rumor.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also, though, at this very press conference.
Oh, boy.
Said something else that got him in a little hot water. Apparently, the best way to shore up the American economy is not to pass responsible tax reform. It's for people to start having more children. Now, he might be unfamiliar with the difficulties regular people face in having children due largely to the kinds of economic policy that he himself is in favor of.
Yeah, that's the problem, because he is not necessarily wrong on the math here, just in terms of the amount of people who are retiring and the amount and the birth rate that we have right now. There's not going to, although I would contend that most of our workers will be robots by the time this becomes a concern.
That's, anyway. I was like, maybe we need fewer people because there's going to be no jobs.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, I know. Exactly. But, you know, this is so infuriating to me, not just about Paul Ryan, because, like, Paul Ryan is one of basically his entire millions of people in his generation who sort of can't seem to grasp what is, like, going on for those lazy fucking entitled millennials.
Yeah.
And I have been a huge apologist for technically us. I have never necessarily felt, well, we have a new name.
I decided to be a millennial. I've given up the Xennial label.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. But anyway, you know, it's like, could the reason that women are not having... Because actually, in polling, in the U.S., women say they would like to be having more children, and they would like to be having the children earlier. But might it be because...
There's our support for them?
Right. Our generation has 300 times more college loan debt than your dumb generation did, that you paid for with your dad's Social Security, Paul Ryan. Also, more of our generation is living with their parents than ever before, and that's not because they're lazy. It's because they can't pay half of their paycheck for rent.
Yeah, it's because they're fucking broke.
Because wages have stagnated over the last 2 decades, and rents have skyrocketed. Yes, exactly. Paying for healthcare is...
Near impossible,
despite...
It's about to get worse.
It's about to get more impossible. Yeah, because that repeal, which isn't a true repeal, is basically going to force the cost to go way up because, you know, healthy people aren't going to be required to pay for it any longer. But this is just, like, the fact I... And, you know, there are a lot of things that, like, Republicans say that I'm like, you're just an asshole, and you know what you're saying, and you've got talking points, and, like, you... But, like, I really... get the sense that, like, he and his entire generation don't fucking get it. Like,
they don't.
Because to a degree, Hillary Clinton didn't even get it.
That's what I was going to say. There are plenty of Democrats in that generation. That generation fucking sucks.
They're terrible.
They had an easy time.
I can't wait, like, for us to actually get to take over.
I know.
Because
these people fucking suck.
They do.
They graduated into an economy where they're a very small generation, so there were jobs available for them always. There were, you know, they were still on the tail end of getting social services still available. The college situation hadn't gotten so out of control that you couldn't afford to go to college. They graduated into an economy where there was cheap housing. So plentiful jobs and cheap housing, and a guy who fucking made it into adulthood thanks to Social Security is sitting around telling us, who are drowning in debt as a generation, to start having babies so that we can save the economy. Literally, die.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's... And not only that, but we are in the midst right now of a conversation about the ways in which the workplace does not support women. And one of the major ways that the workplace doesn't support women is in providing support for them when they get pregnant.
Yes,
and allowing them the flexibility to have kids. Because even though...
Yes, and they are also... Once they come back, they are often... women in general are not paid as well, but they are also, once women have children, they are treated differently in the workplace because they're, she's on the mommy track and she's not going to be able to, we don't know how long she'll stay. And we don't, she might not be able to give as much time to her work as she's going to have to
We're certainly going
to
give all of our time
kid,
so that we don't have to, so that our wives
our
can,
children,
right. But I mean, like, even in a world in which men and women were doing equal shares of child rearing and the housework.
Women still get unequally punished. Well, they get pregnant and get, but unequally punished
but I'm saying
at work too. But yes, also starts, have to
it's
carry
a healthcare
the child.
Conversation first for women of and course. Not for families. Yeah. The healthcare conversation is for women.
And death rates in childbirth are rising in the United States now.
We're
actually,
a fucking
too.
Developing country.
Ay, ay, ay.
And this is sort of only slightly related, but I was also reading about a UN report about how a lot of the basic infrastructure in Alabama is, like, completely unacceptable. Because of the election, they were talking about sort of, like, what the obstacles to getting people to vote in Alabama really are. And in that blue belt of Alabama, they're lacking
to drive on.
Basic infrastructure, like sanitation infrastructure, things like that. That, like, of course our birth rates are... our death rates or whatever it is.
Yeah, sure.
Our birth death rates are rising.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is emblematic of everything I hate about this generation. I think if they want to stop being assholes, they can start having conversations about how they can actually support our generation and make sure that their own children have a world to live in when they get done.
Yeah.
But I have no time for conversations specifically from people whose policies are designed to specifically create more burdens for people that are in this situation. I know a lot of people who would love to have more children who can't fucking afford it.
Right.
There's no childcare. Yeah. I mean, there's like so many things.
Yes.
It's like, it's madness. It's infuriating.
Yeah.
Then there was also,
and then,
speaking of women, Trump's weird and suggestive tweet about Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yes.
Which I'm just going to read it for you because this 240 character limit or whatever, 280, whatever the new character limit on Twitter.
He's been putting to terrible use.
Yeah. Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer and someone who would come to my office, quote, begging for campaign contributions not so long ago, in parentheses, and would do anything for them, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. He prefers himself in third person. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked used. I mean, there's a lot of things that are crazy about this. The first was that Gillibrand was literally attending a bipartisan Bible study when this tweet went out. So I think I might be both mad at everyone and think the world is hilarious. Like, that makes me angry.
Yeah.
In general.
Sure.
But also is hilarious timing. Yeah. The other hilarious thing about the timing was that it coincided with an event led by 59 female House Democrats who were formally calling on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee to launch an investigation into Trump's sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
That had already been scheduled. So that was not coincidental, that timing. Yeah. Right. It was coincidental. It was not intentional, that timing. But he managed to send it in the most hilariously timed way. Obviously, he offers no evidence. Yeah. Other than the fact that he has given her $5,850 in campaign contributions in the past.
All right.
But people got pretty miffed at this suggestion that she would do anything for them.
Obviously.
But like
he
seemed almost shocked that insinuation was received that way.
Well, but I was like, I told you the night of the Roy Moore election, I was, you know, in my cable package, all I have is CNN to watch
for
news. So I ended up, much like Donald Trump does from time to time, hate watching Don Lemon.
Yeah, as you do.
But he had a pretty good panel on, actually, because he had on, like, April Ryan, and Simone Sanders, and so it was, like, we had on our arch nemesis, Paul Begala. But, like, it was good, reasoned and fun kind of like discussions.
Right.
And I don't even remember who said it, but it was just sort of like, you know what? This happens all the time where men say something and other men say, oh, well, maybe that's not what he meant. But women everywhere say, no, I know exactly what that means, because whether it's this or whether it was something else, the same thing with Megyn Kelly. Like, oh, well, he might not have meant she was, like, you know, on her period. But, like, clearly, that's exactly what he fucking meant. And every woman on earth, Republican, Democrat, whatever, knew exactly what he meant.
Yeah.
And this was another one of those moments where it's like, oh, well, maybe that's not what I meant. Yes, it fucking was.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course it was.
Yeah, and like, any idiot can read the intention. Like, any person with eyes can see that it was.
Yeah.
If you have a personal interest in pretending that the president isn't a misogynistic prick, then you might have actively read differently.
Right. Sure.
But you had to actively read it wrong
in
order to not get that impression. Yes.
You had to do, like, some real brain gymnastics.
Yeah. But that is actually a good point, because that is sort of, like, at the base of a lot of what goes on with women at a subtle level in the workplace.
Of course.
Where men will say, that's why those words, those trigger words, are so annoying to women.
Yes.
That's why when someone calls me young or immature, I get so fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It's about signaling to other men in the room that I can be taken down.
Right, exactly.
It's not, and that other women can hear it. They know what's going on. Exactly. They know what's going on. But it's about signaling to other men in the room what the weakness is. They're all gonna, what the story is, they're all gonna stand behind, you know?
Yep.
Like that that is kind of the story of women in society.
Yeah.
That's the larger story.
Yeah.
But in any case, in case you were wondering, Trump has also donated almost $9,000 to Chuck Schumer in the past. because as we know, he used to be a Democrat who donated to Democrats before he realized he was too racist to do that anymore. And in final news.
Yes.
The reality show that is the White House got slightly more showish and less realistic this week. Because Omarosa was fired again. By the way, that woman's been fired from more places by Donald Trump than any human
being
on
Earth. Or wasn't
fired
at all.
Right. Or was...
By her, you know, interview.
Yeah.
You know.
It's unclear. She either quit in a dramatic huff or was fired.
Right.
Or a third thing happened that we're not sure of.
Right. As the story goes, which she denies, was that she got very worked up about some credentials at a holiday party and attempted to get into the presidential residence.
Right, which got reported in conservative media as Omarosa tries to break into the White House.
Yeah.
So that obviously... Boy.
Now, whether or not that happened or not...
Right.
What does seem to have definitely been happening over the last year is that every single person working at the White House has grown to really hate Omarosa.
Well, she sounds impossible. She sounds like a horrible human being.
Yeah. So all...
She's a cartoon. She's a reality TV character.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
She's not a real person.
Yeah, and she's continuing on in her firing, like, playing into that. And that's what, like,
of course,
I so...
like...
And that's what I...
They knew.
That's what I know, exactly. And that is what I so love about this, because she, Where's that quote of hers where she said, she said, as the only African-American woman in this White House, I have seen, this was on Good Morning America, I have seen things that have made me uncomfortable, that have upset me, that have affected me deeply and emotionally, that has affected my community and my people. It is a profound story that I know the world will want to hear.
She's teasing her book already.
She's teasing her book already. And then not only that, she said something later, too, she said, she hasn't really elaborated on this, but she said that, like, Trump had done something that had given her grave concerns, and that she's going to issue a statement about that will affect the president in a big way, but she didn't say it, like, she literally, like,
she's teased,
she, like, teased.
This is a promo for her statement.
She teased, like, a cliffhanger, like, into the, like, you know... Find out after the break, or which, you know, when we come back on the season finale, like it's
literally, it's like she basically just had a mid-season finale.
She did, yes.
You
exactly.
know how television
after
shows,
the winter hiatus, I will tell you what grave concerns I actually have. But until then,
stay tuned.
Exactly.
Talk about it a lot so that everyone tunes in.
But it was actually John Kelly who fired her, and I love the...
He
apparently
it.
Also hated her, but the New York Times put it in a way which was pretty good, actually, because they said, Ms. Newman's time came to an end in the Situation Room during a meeting with Mr. Kelly. It's an unusual place to hold a discussion about employment, but one where the backdrop is both intimidating and quiet. This is the good part. Perhaps to calm an exchange that had the potential to spiral out of control.
Do you think that he's tried to fire her before and it just hasn't
worked?
Like, but I could see her being the kind of person that you sit down to fire and then, like, somehow it doesn't work.
Right. Like, yeah, right? Like, I know.
You say you're fired and by the end of the conversation, she has convinced you she's not fired.
Well, she was apparently one of the people who added to, like, a lot of the drama and chaos
well,
in the
course.
White House. Of course she did.
She's
but,
a
like,
reality
also,
television
like,
character.
She is, but, like, what does she even...
What's she doing
like,
there?
What is she doing there?
What's her qualification?
Right?
Just having been on The Apprentice is her qualification?
That's it.
It's like...
Yes.
Like, there are so many aspects of the Omarosa in the White House story that... Big questions of sorts.
Yeah. Well, certainly if it was to do any sort of outreach, which I believe it was, actually, she certainly doesn't have much to show for herself. She certainly didn't have anything to show for herself after the Alabama election.
Well, that's why she's doing this about face, where now she's like, no, I saw things that are of grave concern to my community, because now she's trying to be like, I couldn't do the outreach,
right,
because now
exactly.
I had to get these secrets.
Right,
like,
exactly.
This, she knows how to spin the story. You know, she's working at it.
Yeah.
That's why she's been able to be fired so many times in so many capacities by Donald Trump.
Right.
Like, that's why she's still a character in all of our lives.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently she'd really fallen out of favor with Jared Kushner.
Well, I'm not shocked to hear that.
No.
I would be shocked if anyone is in favor with him or finds him in their favor.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be shocked if he's likable enough to, like, impress a squirrel at this point.
No.
In any case, that's the news this week. We'll be back at some point before the end of the year, but we're not sure when. Because
happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas when it comes to Christmas.
All the Jew lawyers out there.
Exactly.
Gosh.
Or as we say in New York City, happy holidays.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yes.
It's gotten to the point where saying Merry Christmas feels weird coming out of my mouth, even though I'm literally going home to celebrate Christmas.
Right.
Like that is the my intention.
Yeah.
Behind going home for the holiday season.
Yeah.
But
it is weird because like I obviously am like, I'm totally with you. Like yeah. I will. It's or to even like hear it.
Yeah.
You know, I always, like
I feel my first like, instinct is feel offended when someone wishes me a Merry Christmas.
And then I'm like, oh wait, I'm at church.
Right. Exactly. I was like in a conversation the other day with a friend where we both had just discussed our Christmas plans and we both yeah. I grew up with her from like the time that we were teeny right. tiny
celebrated
children.
Celebrated Christmas together,
so
perhaps.
I know that we both celebrate Christmas.
Right.
And so she wished me a Merry Christmas because I was like, oh, I'm going home for Christmas on yeah. XY date or whatever. And I said happy holidays back. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, when is it okay to wish someone a Merry
Christmas? You're feeding into the war on Christmas.
Yeah, I'm fighting
it
actively, I think, at this point. I didn't intend to fight it when I, you know, set out to help people enjoy the holidays.
Yeah.
But I find myself more and more wanting to fight it.
Yeah.
In any case, we will talk to you at some point in the next 2 weeks.
Right.
But until then, stay sane and call your reps.
Yes.
Bye.